Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to AptarGroup's 2017 second quarter conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Introducing today's conference call is Mr. Matt DellaMaria, Vice President, Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Howard, and welcome everyone. Participating on the call today are Stephan Tanda, President and Chief Executive Officer, and Bob Kuhn, Executive Vice President, Chief Financial Officer, and Secretary. Stephan will begin our call with a brief overview of our quarterly performance. Bob will then discuss a few financial details, and we'll open it up for questions. Information that will be discussed on today's call includes some forward-looking comments. Actual results or outcomes could differ from those projected or contained in the forward-looking statements. Please refer to AptarGroup's SEC filings to review factors that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected or contained in the forward-looking statements. We will post a replay of this conference call on our website. AptarGroup undertakes no obligation to update the forward-looking information contained therein. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Stephan.
Thanks, Matt, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, we reported our second quarter results, including core sales growth of 1%. A very important element of our business model is the diversity across our eight different markets. Solid core growth in our pharma and food and beverage segments offset the decline in our beauty and home segment. On an EBITDA basis, while our overall margin was at 20% of sales, on an absolute basis, we were below prior year's strong results, mainly due to decreases in business in certain markets and higher raw material costs. Our earnings per share improved over the prior year, primarily due to certain discrete tax benefits recognized in the quarter that offset the negative operating items. Bob will go into more detail on the specifics impacting our bottom line in a few moments. While we had anticipated certain headwinds coming into the quarter for our beauty and home segment, our performance in a number of our key markets, such as fragrance and hair care, were below our expectations. The markets in Brazil remain quite fragile due to the tough economic situation. However, we are growing our business in the surrounding Andean region and also in Mexico. Furthermore, in line with several of our large CPG customers, we are facing softer demand in our more established markets. In addition, this quarter, we experienced operational challenges at the European facility that produces decorative components sold to the beauty market, and this, along with higher raw material costs, negatively impacted the segment's profitability. The operational issues are isolated to this one facility, and we are taking action, but expect it will take several months before we are fully back on track. I can say that we all have a clear sense of urgency and focus on returning beauty and home to sustainable, profitable growth. We are building a better understanding of the issues and have taken determined actions on several fronts, including people and operations across the beauty and home footprint. For example, we are in the process of recruiting a new regional leader for North America and the head of sales in North America. We've appointed a business development leader for the Asian region outside of China, and we will continue to strengthen our leadership bench throughout Asia. We have started to implement the commercial excellence program focused on strengthening our sales and marketing capability, and we intend to roll this out across each region. Based on the initial success in beauty and home, we will be extending the program to other segments over time. We have also initiated a targeted effort to raise efficiencies at some of our beauty and home facilities. We're not in a position today to discuss this in greater detail, but we will provide an update at our Analyst Day on September 7th, which will be webcast via our website. These initiatives will take some time to generate meaningful results. In the meantime, we remain fully committed to our customers and our markets. There are a number of very attractive long-term growth opportunities, and we plan to actively participate in this growth, particularly in facial skincare, color cosmetics, and in high-growth economies where we are underrepresented today. We will continue to bring affordable innovation and solutions to the market. For example, in the past quarter, we helped Avon, L'Occitane, and O Boticário launch several new fragrances. Our Airless Serum Dropper was also featured on new skincare serums in Latin America. In addition, we have helped customers such as Estée Lauder and Shiseido to launch new makeup products in North America featuring our custom and soft actuation cosmetic pumps. Now turning to our pharma segment, it was another very strong quarter with core sales increasing across across each end market. We saw strong demand from the consumer healthcare segment and participated in new eye care launches for Bayer and for the Abbott-owned company Laboratorio Synthesis, featuring our ophthalmic squeeze dispenser. In the prescription market, our nasal spray pump was featured on a generic version of Nasonex in Canada, and our cost-effective Twister dry powder inhaler, which was introduced in China in 2015, has entered the market now in India for the first time with an asthma and COPD medication. We continue to validate our recently added capacity in Congers, New York, with our customers in the U.S. injectables market. We expect to begin commercially supplying from this facility by the end of the year. In addition, we are progressing in our partnership with CaliCare to develop real-time medication management technology using digital monitoring systems and with Propeller Health to develop a fully integrated connected meter dose inhaler. These investments and partnerships are part of our long-term strategic vision for the segment. Our food and beverage segment also delivered a good quarter with core sales growth across each end market. In the beverage market, we saw a strong demand for our sports closures featured on bottled water, and we participated on new launches in Europe, Brazil, and China. We are experiencing lower volumes relatively to a year ago to a single specific large beverage customer in China. We expect this to continue until the end of the year when we begin to lap the situation. We also continue to see opportunity in Asia, including the infant nutrition market. Our flip-top closure with a built-in scoop was featured on Yili's brand for infant formula for the Chinese market. Also in the food market, our closures with our flow-controlling Simply Squeeze valves are featured on a new line of salad dressings by Hidden Valley. Finally, as announced in May, we have partnered with Gualapack Group, a leader in pre-made spouted pouches, to bring a pre-made no-spill spouted pouch solution to the European market. This confirms our long-term commitment to bring additional convenience to consumers and new innovative solutions to our customer. As we look to the third quarter, our beauty and home segment is expected to continue to face headwinds in North America and Brazil. In addition, we now anticipate some risk with our business in China due to the recent record heat wave near Shanghai that is resulting in energy restrictions and, in some cases, outages. This impacts our facilities and also certain supplier facilities. It is a bit early to estimate the effect, but we are watching the situation closely. The business pipeline in our pharma segment remains rock solid. Although it will likely be difficult to report year-on-year growth due to some significant custom tooling sales that occurred in the prior year's third quarter. We anticipate that our food and beverage segment will continue to grow over the prior year as we further leverage our capabilities and technologies across different categories. Even though we face certain near-term challenges, we are optimistic about our long-term growth opportunities across each business segment. We remain dedicated to executing our growth strategy, investing for the future, and helping our customers to grow their businesses with our innovative dispensing solutions. At this time, I will turn it over to Bob, who will review some of our financial details.
Thank you, Stefan, and good morning, everyone. I'll briefly cover a few details, and then we will turn it over for questions. And looking at how our business segments performed in the quarter, I'll start with our beauty and home segment. As you saw in our press release, core sales, keeping currencies constant, decreased 4%. The majority of the decrease was related to the operational issues at our decorative components facility and challenges in Brazil. Looking at sales growth by market on a constant currency basis, core sales to the beauty market decreased 4%. This was mostly due to the decreases in sales of decorative components. Core sales to the personal care market decreased 3% due to softness in demand for our pumps and closures used with hair care and body care products. And core sales to the home care market decreased 10% from the prior year as sales of insect repellent due to the Zika virus in the prior year quarter did not repeat this quarter. When we look at profitability, I will be referring to EBITDA margins, and in the quarter, our beauty and home segment achieved an EBITDA margin of 14%, which was below the prior year's margin of 16%. margins were negatively impacted by higher material costs, including about $2 million related to the timing of resin cost pass-throughs, and about $1 million related to higher metal component costs. It's important to note that resin costs increased in Europe sequentially from Q1 and remain materially higher than a year ago. Our pharma segment had an excellent quarter, achieving core sales growth of 8% and an EBITDA margin of 35%. Core sales to the prescription market increased 4%, primarily due to increased demand for our metered dose inhalers for asthma and COPD, and our nasal spray devices for central nervous system treatments. Core sales to the consumer healthcare market increased 16%, driven by strong demand for spray systems for decongestants and nasal saline rinses, and increased demand for ophthalmic squeeze dispenser. And finally, core sales to the injectables market increased 8%. It was also a very good quarter for our food and beverage segment, where core sales increased 7%. Our EBITDA margin decreased from 22% a year ago to 20%, primarily due to higher resin costs, higher professional fees, each about a $500,000 negative impact, and a mix of the business compared to the prior year. Looking at each market, core sales to the food market increased 10%, primarily due to strong demand for closures for condiments and granular foods, and core sales to the beverage market increased 5%, primarily due to strong demand for our closures used on bottled water. Cash flow from operations in the quarter was approximately $111 million. Capital expenditures were approximately $32 million. And our free cash flow was approximately $79 million compared to $40 million a year ago. The primary reason for the increase in cash flow relates to improvements in working capital. Looking at our balance sheet capitalization, on a gross basis, debt to capital was approximately 37%, while on a net basis, it is approximately 25%, and we remain slightly under 1x levered compared to our trailing 12 months adjusted EBITDA. As part of our strategy to improve the balance sheet capitalization of our operations in Europe and to take advantage of the favorable interest rate environment there, subsequent to the end of the quarter, we borrowed approximately $800 million in euro-denominated debt and repatriated an additional $750 million in cash to the U.S. The decision to execute this borrowing and repatriation was taken in the second quarter, and this triggered a tax liability which was offset by deductible losses related to foreign currency exchange contracts that were put in place related to the repatriation. The net effect of both these tax items was a tax benefit of approximately 5 cents in the quarter. An additional tax benefit that we recognized in the quarter related to stock-based compensation, and this has to do with the new accounting principle around stock option exercises. We spoke about this item in the first quarter and the difficulties around forecasting the impact, as there are several variables that cannot be predicted. One is the share price, and another is the volume of employee stock option exercises. When we developed our second quarter guidance, we had anticipated, based on historical exercise volumes, that we would likely incur a 2 cent tax benefit, and this was included in our guidance range. In reality, the share price movement in the quarter and the level of exercises, we recognized a 9 cent tax benefit. For the full year 2017, we currently expect depreciation and amortization to be approximately $150 to $155 million, and that our capital expenditures will also be in this range. Lastly, we expect our effective tax rate for the second half of the year to be in the range of 26.5% to 28.5%, which includes an estimate of 2 cents for the potential tax benefit related to stock-based compensation accounting method. At this time, Stefan and I would be glad to answer any of your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, simply press the pound key. Again, if you have a question or comment at this time, please press star, then one on your telephone keypad. Our first question or comment comes from the line of Mark Wilde from BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Yeah. Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Stephan.
Morning, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
I wondered, Bob, if you can just talk a little bit about that repatriation of cash, the $750 million, what you're targeting that for.
Well, I mean, the essence behind the repatriation really was, you know, we've been striving to better balance our asset base and liabilities in Europe, which, as you know, is our largest region in terms of asset base. And with the interest rate environment as it was in Europe, historically low interest rates, and also since cash is generated out of Europe, we weren't earning any interest on the cash that was parked over in Europe. So we took the decision to raise debt at these historically low rates and repatriate the existing cash as well as the additional borrowed money back to the U.S. So at this time, it was really done more for a better balance sheet capitalization of our operations in Europe. And at this moment, we really don't have any immediate needs for that, but it ultimately gives us flexibility to redeploy that cash should we need to. It'll add about net $1 million of additional interest expense each quarter going forward. But again, we felt that that was worth the price of the flexibility and ultimately to get back to the balance sheet capitalization that we've been trying to achieve.
Okay, that's helpful. And if I could, just for as a follow-on, I wondered if you could put a little more color on around what's going on in both Brazil and in China.
Well, let me jump in here, Mark. In Brazil really has seen, next to the normal volatility, quite some political turmoil, as you know, with the question around whether Lula is the candidate for the next election, then Temer being under a lot of pressure, which has not helped to get consumer confidence going. So our business is down significantly in Brazil. Fortunately, the rest of Latin America is actually up quite a bit. When you talk to folks in Brazil, they're actually quite optimistic. Now, next to the fact that Brazilians are always optimistic, I do sense that with the election coming, and it looks like it goes the right way, but, you know, as we know from other countries, polling can be deceiving. But certainly, I feel optimism there, but that doesn't take anything away from that Q2 has been quite disappointing. When it comes from China, look, this has really just hit us the last week. We had a record heat wave in Shanghai, and power was curtailed due to the high need for air condition. And our plant had to be shut down for several days. Our supplier plants had to be shut down for several days. That puts quite some strain, particularly on the incoming supply chain. So even if we can catch up with our own plans, we are not clear on the supply chain. So we just wanted to flag this, and we will watch it closely as it the quarter unfolds.
Okay, very good. I'll turn it over. Thanks, Stephan.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Ghansham Panjabi from Robert W. Baird. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. This is actually Matt Krieger sitting in for Ghansham. How are you doing this morning?
Good, Matt. How are you, Matt?
Good, good. I was wondering if you could provide some added detail on your long-term growth expectations by segment, and then maybe expand on how you can kind of catch up to those long-term expectations in any underperforming segments, maybe beauty and home.
Yeah. Look, the long-term growth expectations have been set by the company based on a very thorough strategic planning process. The macro trends that underline those are all in effect. Just to key them off, rising population, higher standards of living, urbanization rates going up dramatically, and then, of course, an aging population. Do not expect that we're going to revise those targets in September. Clearly, we are, with the portfolio we have, I think I've said before, we should be in a mid-single-digit top-line growth with the portfolio we have. Now, having said that, clearly, we are not happy with the top-line growth in beauty and home. Quarter one looked a little bit better, and clearly in quarter two, we had some factors, particularly with the decorative facility in France, that took a bite out of top-line growth and also, of course, of the bottom line. This is a specialty facility that really addresses the premium high-end market for beauty, and it's a project-based business. The plant was running at close to capacity, and we have to say in hindsight, of course, with the benefit of hindsight, the team underestimated what it would take for a new product launch, which kind of brought the whole facility to its knees and had a knock-on effect to some of the other customer projects. Those issues are addressable. We've added resources. We've established a task force, but it will take some time to work through those issues until we get back to a performance that is acceptable to us. So that I would kind of see as an isolated but significant development that will be with us for a few months. Looking further out, clearly the beauty market is in the western part, the beauty and home market in the western part is challenged in the traditional retail challenge channels. Our large CPG customers are struggling to create volume. On the other hand, we have a good and frankly improving pipeline of customer projects. We see the first positive signs from the commercial excellence program that we've kicked off in North America. And, of course, you have new consumers entering the categories in the high-growth economies, particularly also the luxury market in China is growing quite a bit. So, again, I think this problem is solvable, and we certainly have our sleeves rolled up and working hard at that.
That's very helpful. And then can you provide some added detail on the margin decline in the pharma segment, just in terms of what drove the decline, and then how long do you expect lower year-over-year margins to persist?
Well, I mean, as a reminder, in speaking to the long-term targets, our long-term EBITDA margin target is 32-36 for the pharma segment. So while it was down, you know, a percent compared to last year, we've been at the upper end of that range for some time. Having said that, this quarter, the mix of the business, stronger injectable business, all three divisions were up in the quarter. Injectable and CHC were up stronger than Rx. So mix was a part of it. And then you also have some startup costs on the validation of the U.S. injectable business that we've spoken about.
That's helpful. Thank you for the context.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Adam Josephson from KeyBank. Your line is open.
Stefan, Bob, and Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Adam.
Stefan, just one on the leadership changes in North America and Beauty and Home. You talked about recruiting a new regional leader and a new head of sales, if I heard you correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong, but before you got there were fairly recent leadership changes in Beauty and Home in North America as well. So can you just kind of help us with precisely what the recent leadership changes have been and now what additional is happening?
Sure. I think there was a change made, looking at Bob, probably 3 years ago.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah. So I think at that time the focus was really on raising profitability of the North America segment, which actually was accomplished. Now, kind of in the next phase, we really need to get growth going again. And we really felt we needed a higher level of expertise and execution on customer engagement and the sales force. So that's really what led to the change. So independent of the leadership transition, we've implemented a project in the U.S., as you know, around commercial excellence, which focuses particularly on creating transparency of the customer project pipeline and, of course, also on the execution, on the performance of the commercial leadership, the sales force. That is in full swing. Now, with that, also, we want to bring a new leader on board, both for the overall business in North America as well as for the sales force, and those searches are pretty far advanced. I think that's the long and short of it.
So just to be clear, the person you brought in a couple of years ago is now going to be replaced?
Yes.
Okay. Bob, I'm going to move around a little bit here. D&A and CapEx guidance coming down by a few million. What's behind that?
Honestly, it's a little bit of some projects that are at the end of their depreciable lives, and as we get closer to the back half of the year, we take another mid-year review of open capital projects and what's out there. So, we try to reassess the timing of when those expenses are going to hit, and it's really nothing more than a reassessment of mid-year where we're at and where we expect to finish with the cash related to those investments.
Okay. Bob, also on the raw material costs, so you mentioned, I think, $2 million of resin pass-through drags and then $1 million of higher metal in the quarter. So there's a $3 million hit from raw materials, and you talked about resin costs in Europe being remaining materially higher than a year ago. Can you just talk about just help us with what's going on with metal costs, resin in Europe and resin in North America, and what you're thinking the impact will be in 3Q from all that and perhaps beyond, just to give us any sense of what's going on there?
Sure. So the $3 million, as you correctly stated, that relates only to the Beauty and Home segment. We had about another $500,000 increase in raw material costs in the food and beverage side for second quarter as well. So total for Aptar is about $3.5 million. So if we look at what resin has done sequentially Q1 to Q2, while it did come down in the U.S. about 7%, it went actually up 7% in Europe. And due to the weighting of our business being stronger in Europe, obviously that has a bigger impact on our Beauty and Home business there in Europe. If we look to year over year, both the U.S. and Europe are up over the second quarter last year. The U.S. is up about 5%, but Europe is actually up over 20% compared to last year. So as we look out in Q3, on a sequential basis, we are seeing resin coming down in the U.S. about 1%, and looks like Europe for the time being is expected to go down essentially the 7% that they went up in the second quarter, but nevertheless, they're still up significantly year on year. As far as metal, I don't have any specific comments. It's just been a general gradual increase. Nothing that I can point to that's volatile or anything at this time.
Thanks. And just based on what you said about Europe resin, would you expect a comparable raw material drag year on year in 3Q as you experience in 2Q?
I mean, it compared to Q3, yes. I mean, it'll be it's less than it is. I'm sorry, it's more it's higher cost than it was last year, but not to the magnitude that we've seen in Q2.
In terms of the year-over-year change.
Right.
Okay. So a bit
less.
It depends
on where your reference point. Yeah, it depends on where your reference point is. If you're comparing Q3 to Q3 or Q3 to Q2.
Right. I got it. I'm just talking about the magnitude of the year-over-year drags, 2Q17 versus 2Q16, and then 3Q17 versus 3Q16.
Yeah, it'll be less than what we experienced in Q2. That's
okay.
What we're anticipating.
Yeah. Just a couple others. Stephan, how would you characterize your discussions with customers these days? And what kind of caution are you seeing about the macro in North America, Brazil, elsewhere? And are you seeing any destocking?
To start with the last question, not really. And of course, conversation with customers are very much dependent on their context, but overall, I would say good. We have a rock-solid, attractive pipeline in pharma. We see good new project activity in food and beverage, particularly in water, in infant nutrition, but also in condiments. You saw in my earlier remarks. In beauty and home, I have to say we see some first signs that the efforts in North America are bearing fruit with a pickup in discussions for new projects. So that pipeline is refilling. On a macro level, of course, continue to have the volume challenges of particularly the Western CPG customers, particularly in traditional retail channels. But we also see some good growth from independent brands, and of course the rise of consumer spending in the high growth economies. Latin America, we talked about Brazil. It's really a tale of two worlds. Brazil having significant challenges, and there is
still some cautiousness for this year with some optimism for next year, particularly with the upcoming election. Outside of Brazil, actually, Argentina, Colombia, Mexico are doing quite well. In general, I would say that the need for innovation is also coming back and well recognized, but also with the large CPG companies. I mean, they realize that the playbook of just cost out and zero-based budgeting and the race to the bottom has its end. And in the end, if you're a branded player, you need to stand out through innovation. And clearly, that is an area we can help. But we can also help on the cost reduction with lightweighting, higher cavity counts. Just a couple of weeks ago, we turned over a large contract just by increasing cavity count and increasing productivity. So innovation is still the core of what we bring to our clients.
Thank you. In the interest of time and fairness to all participants, ladies and gentlemen, please limit yourself to two questions and one follow-up. Then if you have any additional questions, you can queue back in as time allows. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Jason Rogers from Great Lakes Review. Your line is open.
Yes, I was wondering about what percentage of sales in the Beauty and Home segment are generated from China.
Oh, I mean, overall, it's pretty much close to the overall average. It's about 7% of the overall Beauty and Home sales.
And do you think at this point you're maintaining share in the Beauty and Home segment, or is competition becoming more of a factor? And did you lose any business from the issues that you had in the plant in France?
Yeah, I think if you step back a little bit over the last few quarters or last few years, I think there's no denying that we've lost some share. I mean, part of what we're doing here in the improvement efforts is to make sure we're getting back on the front foot in terms of competing for business, getting the new project pipeline filled, and that is to gain some of that business back. Clearly, when you're not executing and not meeting customers' delivery expectations, that has some consequences. I don't think, speaking particularly about the French decoration facility, I don't think that's irreparable, but we will have to kind of go hand in hand to repair these situations.
And then finally, you may have touched on this, but you had strong core growth in the pharma segment. Why did that not translate into better leverage for on the margin side?
I mean, you got a mix, as I explained earlier, Jason, on the injectables being up 8% and consumer healthcare being up 16%, and prescription, which, as you know, brings a slightly higher margin, was only up 4%. So you got that, plus you've got some of the startup and validation costs of the new elastomer expansion in Congers that we mentioned.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of George Staphos from BOA Merrill Lynch. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question and the details. I guess first question I had, Stefan, you said as far as China goes, you're and specific to Beauty and Home, you're watching it, and I guess you'll, as a company, you'll report back next quarter in terms of what effect there might have been from the power outages. Is there a figure that you, recognizing it's hard to call, that you've embedded in guidance in terms of what impact you expect from that development?
No, it's really too early to tell. I mean, if it stays at the 3 days, then I think we'll have a black eye and move on. But we also wanted to put you on notice. If we have another heat wave rolling through, it will start to become significant. Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. Appreciate that. And then in France, if you can talk about, again, what the impact of that operational issue was, and if I could get a little bit more color in terms of how you're sort of remediating there, whether you had to add additional equipment or people, that'd be helpful. And then lastly, for my third question, back to China, you know, this beverage issue has been a lingering one. I seem to remember it being discussed on the second quarter call last year. It now hopefully is lapped by fourth quarter of this year, recognizing you're talking about customers, et cetera. What makes you most comfortable that it should be lapped by the end of this year? Thank you, guys.
Okay. Talking about France first, the main activity here is really to bring additional resources from other facilities and additional capabilities in terms of people to the plant to work through planning, production scheduling, raising yields, lowering scrap rates so that the plant can operate at the levels it is designed for and should be able to operate on. I've been in manufacturing game all my life. If you have a facility that runs pretty close at capacity and it kind of gets a knock in the stomach, it takes some time to settle it all out. Eminently solvable issue. We're bringing the right capability to it. Clearly, we haven't planned for that. In hindsight, that was not the best way of going forward, but it is what it is, and now we're addressing it, and we have our sleeves rolled up to address it.
And George, Stephane, just on the impact, I just want to add that it was about half of the decrease in the beauty and home sales in the quarter.
All right. From a profit standpoint, can you relay, or should we just assume an average margin on that revenue?
Yeah, I would assume an average margin, yeah.
Okay, that's great. And then on China?
On the China situation, I think we've become increasingly transparent on that, just to also give you a feeling to ring-fence it. Actually, our beverage business is doing gangbusters when you exclude this one account. Now, as I tell my people, when you exclude the things that don't work, it always looks great. But at least I want to give you guys the transparency that it is one account that decided to double source. Now, knowing a bit what the capacities available are gives us the expectation that this will lap at the end of the year with all the qualifications around that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Chip Dillon from Vertical. Your line is open.
Yes, and good morning. Bob, I had a question about the repatriation. I know that, when you look at the broader marketplace, people are sort of sitting on their edges of their seat hoping there's some kind of corporate tax reform that would involve a tax holiday. And it seems like you guys are moving earlier. Is that because, I mean, when you look at what the euro's done and the fact that it's down, that maybe you have some translation losses that have, I think that's what you were sort of suggesting, that might be offsetting the taxability of bringing that money back, and therefore, in your case, it's just kind of a moot point because the cash you've had over there has kind of lost some value in dollar terms. Is that fair?
Well, I mean, Chip, indirectly, it's close to that, but it's a very complicated topic. So our decision to borrow money in Europe and to repatriate that back to the U.S. was irrespective of any pending tax legislation. So you are correct in that when we took the decision, the dollar strengthening against the euro put us in a situation that our tax impact on repatriation would be less than it has been historically. That combined with other factors that you mentioned, which is, essentially the cash we had over there earning nothing in Europe, and the low borrowing rates they alluded to, made sense to bring that cash back now, and then obviously pay the tax on the repatriation. Offsetting that was us locking in at the time we took the decision to hedge the amount that we were going to bring back. Since that time, the euro has re-strengthened, and that essentially led to the loss on the hedge, which gave us the additional tax benefit.
Okay, that's helpful. And then I guess the next question is, I know the last two sort of significant deals I sort of remember being, Stelmi and then Mega Airless. As you look out, in the next couple of years where would we likely see an M&A move at Aptar? And I note that, take, for example, the Stelmi deal. I remember when you all bought them, there was sort of this expectation that because maybe the business you were buying wasn't quite as, you know, super high end as what the pharma business was, it still nonetheless seems to have not created any diminishment in your margins. And I just didn't know if, therefore, because of your ability to assimilate, you know, businesses that maybe standalone aren't generating the same returns, you know, but seem to improve when you buy them, if there's more out there and if it's likely to be in pharma or just as equally likely to be in the other two segments.
Yeah. Well, maybe let me start and then Bob, please build. I mean, first of all, we're active in 8 different markets, and we look for opportunity across the portfolio. And pretty much for opportunities, as you described, every deal you want to do is you look at how can we as the new owner create more value and therefore have it make sense both for the seller and the buyer. So there is no predisposed bias or for one sector versus the other. As you can imagine, if you go through straight auction, assets in the pharma space can be had for enormous prices, and therefore the value creation on top of that is very limited unless you have a very special situation like we had with Salmi. But if we find value creating opportunities in other of our 8 markets, we will act on those also. The M&A pipeline and the M&A environment is obviously active with where equity valuations are, but that also makes it a little harder if you're a disciplined acquirer to find those opportunities that will create value.
Yeah, the only thing I would add, Chip, is you were spot on when it relates to the Stelmi transaction. I think our pharma team did an exceptional job in integrating that with the legacy pharma business, and it really since that time have significantly upgraded the quality of the offerings that we have, the productivity, the value added features that are now part of the product portfolio, and we're able to improve margins. As Stefan said, you know, back then, you know, I think we paid a little bit less than 10 times EBITDA for Stelmi, and as Stefan alluded to, the environment has changed significantly since that time, which then makes finding these types of value creation M&A deals in pharma a little bit more difficult. But that doesn't mean that we're not looking in all areas.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Debbie Jones from Deutsche Bank. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Debbie.
The first question is around pharma. I thought your comments in the release were maybe a little bit more cautious. I realize you're trying to call out the difficult comp. Can you just get a little bit more granular? I believe there was some tooling in the year-ago period, but you know, is there anything specifically new that is preventing you from seeing historical growth rates or more recent growth rates that you've seen?
I mean, on the historical and future, certainly no sign of concern in the pharma business. The pipeline is rock solid. It keeps building. The team's executing. So I think what we really want to highlight is the comparable in the short term.
Yeah, and Debbie, just as a reminder, you know, Q3 last year was when we had announced significant tooling sales of about $11 million in our consumer healthcare business, and then I don't believe at that time we could mention the project, but you now know that that's related to the U.S. Allergan project for the ophthalmic squeeze dispenser. So that was a sizable one-time type of tooling impact, and that's a little bit what we're calling out.
Okay. Thank you for that. And then the growth in food and bev, and how much of that was just related to, I think you mentioned the benefit in China with the heat wave. I imagine that's flowing through there. Could you just comment on that? And then I just have one quick question on guidance.
Okay, on the heat wave, that actually happened earlier this week, so that would not be in our results. And we certainly didn't bank on that when we gave guidance for Q3. But clearly, if you have a good summer in general, that's always good for the beverage business. I just wanted to come back on the pharma point because, I mean, we all are very happy with the Salmi deal. We just talked about that. But recognize we are starting up the Congress facility, so until this is fully
operational, we will have the startup cost, which is also part of the Q3 guidance. So.
Okay, thank you. And just quickly, just with the kind of variability with the stock-based comp accounting in your guidance, is there any consideration of, you know, providing a different type of guidance going forward for us, just given that seems to cause some variability in our estimates?
No, you know, it's, Debbie, it's virtually impossible to predict. I mean, I think sitting back a quarter ago this time, I don't think any of us had expected all the packaging stocks to move up like they did in the quarter, and that obviously encouraged employees to exercise option in that quarter. So, you know, what we plan to do is kind of look at it on a historical average and give you a essentially a 2% tax range guidance going forward. And then I think I mentioned that we're putting in, baked in that tax rate guidance, is essentially 2 cent positive coming from that. But honestly, it could be zero next quarter. It could be eight. A lot is going to depend on what happens.
I mean, on the road, we've been trying to be quite explicit about this effect because, like you all, I find it not easy and maybe not helpful if you really only look at EPS. Because you really have to forecast the stock price, you have to forecast exercise activity of employees, and frankly, you guys are probably better in that game than we are. We are focused on running the company. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, and I look forward to your investor day.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Chris Manuel from Wells Fargo. Your line is open.
Good morning, gentlemen. Just a couple questions. One, kind of a follow-up on the pharma piece, just so I understand it right. Did I hear you correctly that tooling last year was $17 million in the quarter in the pharma piece, and that X, if we make the adjustment for the tooling piece out and make it a more normalized, I don't know, eight or so a quarter, that you would still, your anticipation that business is still growing?
I don't have the exact figure of the Q3 pharma tooling sale, but it was the specific tooling item I called out and that we called out was about $11 million in Q3 last year.
Okay. I was looking back at my notes, and I think I had like 17 or something was the total tooling or the change last year. But it's
possible. I mean, we ran about $5 million this quarter, so, yeah, 17 in total. The exceptional item that we're calling out is the 11 on top of the normal tooling sales that we would have.
Okay, so I guess where I'm going with this, though, is you're calling it out as an item that's going to make growth difficult. So absent the tooling, is there any reason to expect that growth won't still be present?
No, I mean, we're expecting product sales growth in Q3.
Okay, that's helpful. That's what I was looking for. The second, Stefan, is as you kind of look over the portfolio, appreciating, I'm thinking back, it's probably been about 10 years since you bought some of this metal decorative capability, I think it was a piece over in France. Are there other areas in the portfolio where perhaps is now you've got to know the operations over the past, you know, 6 months or so, that you would say are potentially short on capacity where, you know, so you don't have issues or problems like this in the future that you want to potentially build so you don't, you know, so you can stay ahead of the curve? How do you feel about capacity across some of your key technologies?
You know, Chris, I just want to jump in for a second and I'll let Stefan comment. I think what's important to note about the decorative business is Stefan pointed out it's different than our normal molding, assembly, high-speed, high-volume type activity. It is truly a job shop type operation with custom decorative, very creative, special projects. So it's less a question of equipment capacity. It's more equipment of the capabilities and the complexity of the projects and the technologies that we have. So as Stefan said, you know, even though you could be running fine one time, you get a very complex project that requires a lot more attention to that particular project, and it detracts from some of your base business. So very different than, you know, than our core business in terms of capacities. I mean, we constantly look at capacity utilization, you know, across the business, and I think we do a pretty good job of anticipating where we need to add capacities.
Okay.
Yeah, there's really nothing to add here. Of course, the question behind your question is, okay, what's going to bite you next? No, if I know ahead of time, it's not going to bite us.
Having said this, this is not this is quite an attractive area in the high premium end of the beauty world. So that's why it has such an impact if we're not executing on it. So and it gets the corresponding attention.
No, that really was the crux of the question: is where else might you need something? So I appreciate now that it's a little different process. With respect to the startup at Congers, is that still kind of in a startup mode in that it's being expensed, or when does that kind of flip, and what all stuff will you be doing there besides, I know you're doing washing and finishing, are you also going to do any coatings or things of that nature up there?
So, yeah, I mean, all the startup expenses are being expensed, Chris. Obviously we had to staff up. We had to hire quality people, technical people, which are, obviously have very different profiles than our base business. We're doing line trials. Stefan and the board and management visited there this month. And in fact, there's a whole team already geared up running line trials and things like that. All that cost is without any sales.
Yeah. As a patient who gets their drugs injected intravenously, you will be very happy to understand how much and how thorough the qualification of these things are. I mean, it is many months of quality data, quality verification by the clients, by the FDA. So, but there's nothing out of the ordinary. It's just part of the being in the pharma business.
Yeah, and specifically, Chris, to your question on coatings and things, that's done really at the front end of the process, the mixing and the extruding side. You're correct in saying that, you know, we're washing and drying the components and packaging them, but the coating side would be done back in France.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question or comment comes from the line of Brian Raffin from Morgan Dempsey. Your line is open.
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Brian.
Stefan, you mentioned a little, I caught it very early in your analysis. You said that the fragrance markets were kind of below your expectations. The weakness, obviously you talked about the decorative problems in France. Is the weakness in end market, in the mass market volume side, or is it on the upscale prestige side?
Well, clearly in this quarter, the upscale prestige overshadowed everything else, given this hiccup at the decorating facility. That's really what I was referring to.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the
okay.
Prestige, the actual fragrance pumps in prestige were pretty stable, but we were down on mass pumps, which, again,
yeah,
is not related at all to the decorative side that we've talked
yeah,
about.
Yeah, gotcha. Is it a little early to look at expectations for Christmas orders in the fragrance side? That may be more better a third quarter comment?
Yeah, exactly. I think we sharpened our pencil to give you guys the best view of quarter three. Let us give you quarter four when we get there.
Okay. All right. You know, Bob, you mentioned once in the past, you know, with the death of the mall, there's not a day that goes by that some retailer is getting a tombstone. You had talked about the kind of the opportunity for caps and closures with kind of this internet retail. You can't send stuff in a box where, you know, a bottle of detergent opens and spills all over somebody's shirt or a book. Any development there, any ongoing, is brick and mortar kind of dies? What's your sense of new projects in that internet area?
Yeah, I mean, I think across really all our segments, we're seeing increased activity, you know, through the e-commerce channel and providing opportunities for using our sealing technologies and locking type actuators and things like that. Nothing I can specifically speak to right now, but it's definitely something that is becoming much more talked about when we're visiting customers, and certainly we're actively promoting all the features that we have and learning about all the challenges that our customers are facing in this channel.
Yeah, with operations all over the world, I'm going to ask kind of if you kind of look at capacity utilization, you look at, you know, overtime shifts you're running, if you looked at the spectrum between the high and low, maybe pharmaceutical on one side, beauty and home on another side, and then by geography, what would be the area of your kind of lowest capacity utilization, and what would be the boundary on the highest side?
You know, it's hard. I think, Brian, as we've spoken before, our capacity is very much linked on a product line basis, as the assembly equipment tends to be very product line specific. I would say with the decrease in volume that we've been experiencing in the U.S. over the past couple of years, I think our capacity is probably lower in the U.S. We've done everything we can to reduce headcount commensurate with the new volumes, but certainly I think we're very well situated for any increase in activity to absorb that capacity. I think Europe is generally overall decent shape, and I don't really see any big holes or any bottlenecks at this point. I think it's something that we're comfortable with going forward.
As you know, we've talked about this previously, the only facility we have on the books that we talked about is the Guangzhou facility in China that will open in 2018.
Thank you. We have a follow-up question from the line of Mark Wilde from BMO Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Yes. Stefan, I wondered, you mentioned last quarter this sales and marketing realignment. You were going to focus more on prospect targeting, new business development. I think you mentioned a little bit of this earlier, but can you just update us on that process?
Yeah. Look, like in every other function, whether it's Bob's function or HR function, sales and marketing also has ways of doing things better or not as good. And when you come in from the outside, one of the benefits is you kind of bring a different view and maybe a calibration of what excellent looks like. So within all the things that need to happen in sales and marketing, clearly, particularly with our growth rate challenge, we are making sure that we have very good transparency and accountability for what is the new project pipeline, what is the new project discussion with customers, that we create accountability for project conversion and the project execution. And like in every business, what gets measured gets done. So just providing this accountability and the leadership that then follows up results in people getting back on the front foot with customers. Sometimes you get thrown out the front door, you come in the back door. It's just a matter of being more mindful around how you go about sales and marketing, and in a more competitive environment, it's important that you do that well.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question or comment is a follow-up from the line of George Staphos. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. One last one here, and maybe there's a question better asked on the analyst day, but you know, Stefan, if we think about the company, you talked about trying to get on the front foot in terms of, you know, growth, and you felt very good about the new product pipeline, specifically in pharma and food and beverage and even beauty and home. That's improving. And so that mix, I would think, would be a benefit to margin. On the other hand, you mentioned that no doubt you've lost some market share, and you have to regain some momentum, and those initiatives would tend to depress margin. So, you know, as you think about the margin profile for Aptar over the next number of years, do you think the new product pipeline can offset the downward tendency that would naturally exist for any company as it tries to regain market share and fight off competition? Thanks, guys. Good luck in the quarter. See you in September.
Thank you. Excellent question. Of course, there's a third element that comes into the mix, which is innovation, which we haven't talked about. You focus quite a bit that to make sure that your new introduction have higher profitability to offset the fade that you quite rightly described. That's the nature of every business. So we'll talk about that more in future interactions, but clearly we're also fine-tuning our innovation efforts to make sure we continue to stay ahead of the fade and that we maintain our overall profitability. I would just reiterate that there is nothing here that is not eminently addressable. We have clearly tried to be transparent with the issues that have crept up in the quarter two. We've got our sleeves rolled up and have a sense of urgency to address them. Overall, there's a very good future for the company. We are becoming more customer-centric with a greater focus on regional empowerment and building the pipeline. We will aggressively fight back in the beauty and home business, getting back on the front foot and taking advantage of growth areas like color cosmetics and facial skin care and e-commerce. We have ample growth opportunities in food and beverage, and feel very, very good about our pharma pipeline and already invest today for what will drive revenue 5 to 10 years from now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maybe one last question and then we wrap it up.
Our final question or comment is a follow-up from the line of Adam Josephson from KeyBank. Your line is open.
Thanks, Stefan. Just one more longer-term question. I know your goal coming in was to accelerate the company's top-line growth, and I know it's very early days along those lines, but just when we look at what continues to happen in beauty and home, you know, with the weak macro conditions, competitive market conditions, I mean, those pressures have been have existed for 3-4 years, and they don't appear to be going away. So can you just help us understand what exactly you envision will be different under your leadership that didn't exist before? Because it seems like you're dealing with the exact same problems that your predecessor did.
Yeah, look, let me not contrast, but simply say what are the things that we are focused on, and I think we talked about them. Very clear accountability and transparency for new customer projects, clear focus on customer projects and driving growth one regional business unit at a time if you want some more empowerment in the regions. I talked before about that we got to be where the growth is, of course, in the profitable segments. That also means more in the high-growth economies. And clear aggressiveness to make sure we don't yield ground and maintain share. I understand the concern about profitability, but, of course, that's the job description. You've got to come in with innovations. You got to work the cost side of it to make sure you, with that share aggressiveness, you maintain your profitability. When you come in from the outside, you bring different expectations and calibrations. That also means that you bring, when you raise expectations, you need to bring additional capability to the task. We've been quite clear about some of the additional people we've brought to the game, whether it's new business development in Asia, whether it's leadership in North America. There are a number of other leadership changes that are more internal that we haven't talked about. So it's also just bringing the right resources to the task at hand. And with that, every improvement effort takes a period of time. I'm not going to give you a deadline, but I certainly haven't done anything like this that hasn't taken at least 12, 18 months to bear significant fruit. You know? With that,
ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our Q&A session. I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Tandy for any closing remarks.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us. I think we had a very good discussion, and see you all in September.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.